Hello everyone, this is Room to Spill the Tea at the today we are talking to Phil, who has kindly opened us the room at the Freemasons crediting while the tea rooms are being refurbished.
That's great.
Yes, and hopefully we'll be back next week. But yeah.
Yeah, we might be back next week. Should we quickly... Thanks, Aaron. That was a great intro. Should we just quickly just say... Everyone say hi and say their names.
Yes.
Like when people listen back, they know who's saying things.
Yes.
Do you want to start?
Always put me in a hot spot.
I know.
I do. Well, should I start? So I'm Roger.
My name is Luke.
Hi, I'm Julie.
Otis.
Hi, I'm Karen. I got confused. Sorry.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm Phil. Hi.
And Bex. Cool. Who's up here? Okay, it's currently eating. Cool. So so this week we thought we'd, as Tara said, have a conversation with Phil. Yeah. It's fine because we've been here for how many weeks now?
We've been here since
6 weeks.
Yeah, November was. We've been here since October.
Yeah,
because
end of October because we had Halloween.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true. It probably is 6 weeks then.
It's all six. It might be
five or six.
Whatever.
Something like that. Yeah. So we've been here quite a long time. Yeah. And then we just wanted to find out a bit more, basically about Masonry, about the Freemasons, about yourself.
Happy to tell you about that.
And then last week, Tom, who's not here this week, had a chat with you all and came up with some like questions and things we want to know.
Yeah.
So we thought we'd use them as like prompts to have a bit of a chat.
I can start with that, and then I'll put in any gaps if I can see any.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Whether anything comes up, see what happens. Does anyone want to start with a question? There is the first one. I don't know who said this. Do you want to ask?
No.
Yeah. I think Luke asked it.
So you said, what are the Masons and what is Freemasonry? Do you want to add your bit? Can I add your bit?
Yeah.
You're saying, is it a bit like Fight Club, but without the fighting?
difficult to answer that bit. I guess so, depends how you look at it. If I just tell you that it's probably the oldest organisation that's currently operational worldwide, it's been 300 years old in its established form in England. It's a little bit younger in Ireland and Scotland. English was the first lot.
Yeah.
Which was mostly the aristocracy and the kings and queens, and the kind of landowners and people, money people, if you like.
Yeah.
It goes way, way back to the bands of operating masons who built cathedrals. And it goes back, and the kind of theory of it on which we base what we do is based on the building of King Solomon's Temple back in Israel, Palestine, in the time of Christ, around and before that, in the Roman time, before that. Right. So the principles they used and what they called each other, and an apprentice, fellow crafter, somebody who's just developing their skills, and then a master mason who's finished his apprenticeship, is how it evolved. And they used the principles of that, and now we run it unchanged in that 300 years, like a medieval play. And it's just like you're sitting in a medieval, the same language and the same old English is used upstairs in the lodge room, and then run through, somebody comes and joins the lodge, and they have to believe in a supreme being. They have to not have a criminal record, although if somebody has had some criminal problems, once they maybe they went off the tracks a bit when they were younger, and that's spent, then we deal with that. It's not a problem, because that's the law of the land as well, spent convictions. And then people go on to, they join, they do what's called initiation ceremony. Everybody does the same. Kings and queens, the king's a member, I don't think he goes anymore, but he hasn't for years. His uncle, Lord Mountbatten, didn't particularly approve of it. The king's grandfather and his father were both members, and King George VI, his grandfather, was a very prominent Freemason and provincial grandmaster for Middlesex. Before, because he wasn't allowed to be the king and the provincial grandmaster at the same time. It's in the rules.
Oh, right. Like it's a conflict of interest.
Yes,
sort of thing.
That's right, and that goes way back. So it's an ancient society. Essentially, it's a charity.
Right.
And it's one of the biggest charities. It is the biggest charity behind the National Lottery in terms of how much goes out. None of that's collected on street corners, although we admire the people who do that.
Yeah.
But we don't do that. It comes through the members. So it's generally a collection. It's sort of a bit like the old trade guilds. It tends to be a collection of people who are tradesmen or professionals who are mostly on top of their game.
Right.
Somehow or other, they find time for something different.
Right.
That gives them a bit of psychological mental relief. It's like a mental washout. You go and you experience a ceremony, and somebody's got their trousers, one trouser, they rolled up, and all that stuff, and it's all symbolic.
Yeah. Does that happen? Because that's
It'll happen here in 3 weeks' time when there's a chap joining who's been in the submarine service all his life. He's just retiring. We have younger people and older people and a mix. And I've been here since 1980. My uncle Jack from Middlesex, from Uxbridge, who was in the lodge in Uxbridge, which is from our Cornish family, he didn't tell me anything about it. He just said, I think you'll enjoy it. Nowadays, we're much more open and let people know what they're getting involved with. So I hope that gives you a bit of an idea, you know. But essentially, it's basically a charity. There's a women's section. They meet at Topsham and all over the country, in different places. We don't know what they get up to, but they know what we get up to. So then it works. The grandmaster is the Duke of Kent. I suppose that's it for a start.
Yeah.
Now, so question time?
That's great.
What about you, Karen? You got a question? Karen,
I've forgotten actually my question.
Well, can you see the board? Do you want to read one from there?
I can't see the board, sorry.
Okay, shall I read the second one?
Yeah.
Is it a job or something you do voluntary?
Voluntary. Voluntary, yeah. And somehow or other you get wrapped up in it. And, you know, it's people do get a bit too involved.
Yeah.
And get, you know, they visit other lodges and join other degrees. But it's something to keep in balance with the family life.
Yeah.
Cool.
It can get out of hand.
Yeah.
Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Is it Carol or Carolyn?
Taryn.
Karen.
Taryn.
No, Taryn.
Taryn.
Karen, that's what I thought.
Taryn.
Taryn.
Taryn. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Taryn. I didn't hear the term. Okay. No,
Most people.
Forget, yeah.
Do
you want to read a question, Luke?
Yeah.
Go on then. Can you see it? You can't see it. Can you see it from the screen?
But another one.
No? Okay.
What was I saying?
How much time do you spend with Freemasonry?
That's interesting. This lodge joint, it meets 11 times a year.
Okay.
Some only meet 5. If you do 11 meetings a year,
yeah,
maybe most people do 9 or 10 probably, then there are other meetings because we have rehearsals for the ceremonies that we do, try and get that right.
Yeah.
Other people come to see those ceremonies and they we take their criticism, but yeah, we want to get it right.
Yeah.
And this particular yeah lodge has a particular way of doing things that's kind of unique. The
yeah
people come from a distance to see. What we do is based on what they call Exeter working.
Okay.
Different parts of the country do their lodge work. The phraseology is different in different parts of the country.
Yeah.
We think we got it right. Unity here is a bit different. Although it's based on St George's in Exeter, which is 200 years plus old, we still do it a little bit different to them.
Okay. Yeah.
So, and it's sort of unique. People come to see that. And it's quite it's very meaningful for the person who's going through it. Nobody's embarrassed because everybody else has done it.
Yeah.
There's no judgment. Yeah.
So is that St George's, is that something to do with the Witherspoons pub?
No. No. St George's Lodge, there's about 10 lodges meet in Gandy Street in the little building in Gandy Street.
I know.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that
yeah
building's interesting because it goes out all over the other, it's not just one building, it sort of goes out in different directions because it's all medieval.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Exeter.
It looks really interesting.
So there's an old lodge in there.
Yeah,
it was bombed in the war and rebuilt.
Wow.
All the artifacts and the chairs and all the stuff is original from way back.
Cool.
St John the Baptist yeah is the senior lodge in the county. We call it the province
yeah
of Devonshire. So that's number 39. So there's a list of lodges in London that go back to number one.
Yeah.
And this is 1332, which is 1870.
Wow.
39
yeah
is right, is very early. That's St John the Baptist.
Oh, I see. So
that's 260 years old.
Yeah. So they sort of, they number them like in order.
In
so
order,
like number one would have been
order
the first one ever built.
Yeah.
So this is what? Which one?
This is 1332. Exeter School Lodge is much more recent, in the 80s. And that's number 9,000.
So they are still building lodges now?
Yeah.
Or like
opening lodges.
Opening lodges, rather.
Yeah, the big growth in opening lodges was in the 1850 through to 1890.
Mm.
And it's in parallel with the development of the railways, when ordinary tradespeople
yeah
could visit. If the train time between Exeter and Crediton isn't much different than it was when the trains first came. Maybe a minute or two.
Yeah.
There's not a lot
yeah
here. So if you went
yeah
from Crediton to Exeter to visit a lodge, you couldn't do that before the trains because you had to be reasonably wealthy and have a horse and track.
Yeah.
You had
yeah
to have transport.
Yeah, yeah.
As soon
that's
as
true
the trains came, ordinary people could walk to the station, down to your place,
yeah,
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 and go into Exeter and then go to a lodge in Gandy Street.
Mm. Yeah.
So the enormous in expansion and development of lodges,
mm,
very well. We ought to have Michael Portillo on it. It fits completely with the opening of the railways and ordinary people being
right
able to get around.
Yeah,
oh, that's interesting. Though.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're still building opening quite a few now. Are they
not really? No, actually, we've got a problem with closing lodges.
Right.
Because here we've got new people coming in. It's my job to oversee that. I'm the membership secretary.
Yeah.
And we always try and novel the right people, and people
yeah
show an interest, and
yeah
we have open days and stuff. But
yeah
some lodges, I could put it bluntly in my West London twang and say, the old geezers get in a bit of a group and they say, and then new people come and they say, oh, that's not how we do it, and people are discouraged and don't want to come again.
Right.
There's a little bit of that, if I'm honest. And so the old geezers get in a bit of a group
yeah
and it gradually falls apart around them. And there's nobody
right
new coming in.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah,
you know, you get them falling off one end and you have to have them coming in the other.
Yeah.
That's very true.
So that's an issue. But actually, we think we're overcoming that. So does that answer you, give you a bit of an idea of what it's about?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, did you ask, I might have missed this bit, did you ask how people become involved with the Masons?
Yeah, there's one or two things. Normally, in the past, it would be a friend at work would say to his mate, you know, have you thought, I'm off to Lodz tonight, is that something that would interest you? Particularly somebody who's a tradesman or somebody who's good at what they do. It tends to be that it fits the old style of the old stonemason, having a craft.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it goes back to, it's all symbolic with that. Or somebody's brother-in-law, or a father might say to his son, you know, in the old days he didn't say much.
No.
And I'm saying the old days were only 25 years ago, where they wouldn't say much at all. Yeah. And then the son of a mason is called a Lewis. And that goes
called a Lewis?
A Lewis, yeah.
Oh.
That's a term that goes back to medieval times with the operating masons who built a cathedral.
Right.
Where, I'll say to you, Roger, there was a, where the shops are, where Witherspoons and Burger King are along that strip, there was a row of huts there for 300 or 400 years where the masons' families lived that built a cathedral.
Oh, wow.
Every bishop that came along decided he wanted a bit in his name, like as bits of the cathedral you can then, if you walk round it, they'll say, oh, that was Bishop so-and-so, they built that bit.
Yeah.
And then they commissioned the masons. And these operating masons, these stonemasons, might have been working on Notre Dame or in Stuttgart or in Cologne or in Wales or York, for hundreds of years, building the cathedrals in Europe. So they were travelling bands of masons.
Yeah.
Oh,
and it's based on their working practice or what we do.
Mm.
And there is an operating masons lodge in Tewkesbury. I've been to it. And interestingly, a lot of the members are Cornish. Because they work in the stone and the quarries for the China clay.
Right,
okay.
There's
a chap in Exeter who's the secretary of that. So there's one lodge in England that's for operating for stonemasons.
All right.
Only one. One in Scotland, that's in Dumfries, just over the border.
Right.
But only one, which is interesting. Not to say there aren't stonemasons are single members in other lodges.
Yeah.
I was at a lodge a long time ago with one of the guys who runs the stonemasons group that look after Exeter Cathedral, joined the lodge in Budley.
Right.
So it's very diverse. You know. In Bristol, the master of the lodge wears a tricorn hat to symbolise the old Bristol seafaring captains.
Right.
Well,
Bristol was the major port in the country in the early days of Freemasonry.
So
the master in the lodge in Bristol will wear a tricorn hat. There's all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
I've no doubt in London. Sorry if I've gone on a bit. There's yards of it. Thank you for that.
It's interesting.
There's all kinds of things. Can I tell you a little story about the king?
Yeah.
You know, in the Second World War, King George VI was a great guy. He was a quiet man.
Yeah.
He was a fairly quiet man.
Yeah.
He had to take over from his brother, and he didn't really want to. George VI. When his brother abdicated.
His brother, Edward
the
Seventh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Edward
VII.
That's right.
Yeah.
The other one went off with that American. Right?
Yeah.
He couldn't carry on because he was married and divorcee. He packed it in. He abdicated in 1938. And his brother, they called Bertie, he was a bit self-conscious. He stuttered.
Mm.
He
didn't
really want to take it over.
Right.
I was at a lodge in Staines, near where I come from, Middlesex, near the airport, sitting next to a bloke who said that, I'm looking on the board on the wall, like upstairs, and he says, this particular lodge consecrated. That means they come along, did a ceremony to start the lodge from nothing. About 10 lodges meet there, and it said consecrated by HRH Duke of York, 1936. That was the king. He became King George the Sixth. He was provincial Grand Master for Middlesex, so he would have come along with his entourage and consecrated the new lodge and kicked it off from there. This guy told me, he'd been there, that when he came to lodge, and he liked to do the garden in Windsor Great Park, in the little house, not in the castle, at the end of the Royal Mile, there's a little lodge house.
Yeah.
He liked to do the garden there. You might know that. There was a documentary by the Queen Mother about it.
Yeah.
And when he was doing the garden, sometimes he'd go into a lodge in Staines,
right,
sort of incognito, and sit at the back and have a pint with the boys.
Oh, I see.
When he did that, he didn't stutter.
Right.
So the guy that said to me, he said he was amongst company that wasn't judgmental, that didn't give him any pressure,
right,
and he felt at ease.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's sort of unfortunate. The man, if you've seen the film The King's Speech,
yeah.
I've
seen it. Have you seen it?
The Australian guy, have you seen that? Have you all seen that?
I've seen bits of
Otis, you've heard that film?
I've heard of it.
King's Speech, yeah.
Yes.
So it's a great film, and it describes, and so what happened, this guy, I'm trying to think of the guy's name, from Australia, who coached him through having to make broadcasts to the country, particularly the beginning of the war, which was really necessary, and he stuttered and he was self-conscious and he didn't want to do it. The guy that coached him was a Freemason,
so he
automatically have felt
at ease, comfortable
with the guy not being judged.
So,
and then he went on to do those speeches which were rehearsed, didn't he? If you think that when he was in lodge, he didn't stutter. So, I mean, I think that's incredible. It's a shame it didn't come out in the film, but they weren't going to talk about Freemasonry in that film.
Yeah.
So,
right.
But it also, as a man, as a real solid individual, Churchill said to him in 1940, "Excuse me, sir, but I think you and the family should go to Canada." Because Churchill obviously thought it might go the wrong way here and get invaded. Yeah?
Yeah.
And he said,
"Yeah."
He said, "We're staying with you."
Very nice.
He had the option to get on a Royal Navy warship and go to Canada for the duration, like the Norwegians came here.
He didn't do that.
He didn't do that.
he got knocked down by a car, though.
And then
did he?
Yeah, he did. And so did Adolf. Yeah, they both got hit down by cars. Then.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And then the palace got bombed as well, didn't it?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So
he was surprised by knowledge, Eric.
I got, I stood at the end of the road on the Bath Road near Heathrow in 1952. So I'm taking you back. And my mum said to me, "Actually, going to give you a laugh here. I was upstairs in the toilet, and she said, 'You better get a move on because we're going up the road in a minute to see the king go by.'" And when he died in Windsor, but the entourage, the procession was going down what we called then the Bath Road, was going into London for the line in state. We went up the end of the road, which was only 100 yards from the end of our little road, and I saw the entourage go by in 1952. So it's funny how that all what goes around, you know.
Yeah. All the links, I suppose, that just come up.
So does that give you? But he was. So the crown heads of Europe, were members of Freemasonry because it was aristocracy thing from way back. But it changed more into, but people rely on each other and trust in each other, and if you shake hands you don't have to count your fingers afterwards. It's a London expression, but it's true. It's not perfect, but it's more perfect than the most. Kipling, people like that. All sorts of Roosevelt, Fleming, Montgomery, Churchill, all those people. It was more fashionable in those days. But all those people, and I think the back to the wartime thing that was important, the relationship between Churchill and Roosevelt to bail this country out. They were both Freemasons, so there was an initial level of trust.
Just both being part of
their differences.
Something.
Yeah,
the same thing.
And probably fairly straight talking if there was an issue. As a result of that.
Well, that's quite a nice thing to do, isn't it?
I think so.
If you can sort of talk directly to someone.
Can I say that upstairs, when you join, there's a thing that says when they put the apron on for the first time, that's symbolic of a Mason. They put the apron on, and they say you must not enter a lodge with somebody with whom you're at variance.
Okay,
so somebody that you're having an argument with, that you're unhappy with, who's stitched you up, or they've misunderstood you or something, you must not enter a lodge because it will affect the harmony of the lodge. You should both retire. This is, I was master, so I had to learn this stuff. You should both retire, and in order to settle your differences, and then return to not upset the harmony of the lodge.
Right. Well, so it's the idea you'd have to essentially make peace with each other before coming back in the room.
And that's near enough the actual wording.
Yeah.
Don't talk about religion or politics, although I just did.
Yes. Off the record.
Because that's divisive, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
So people still do a bit, but it's not.
What about charity? What work do you do for charity or other organisations?
Yeah. So
that's quite interesting.
We don't rattle tins on a corner. Like I said, we got plenty of time for the lions and the people that do.
Can I just suggest, because there was a follow-on question, I think.
Yeah, go
which
on,
I think you're answering actually, which is kind of how do the Masons raise funds?
Right.
Which
all
is
the members,
same sort of thing.
Some might put in £10 a week. £10 a month, some into the charity steward. There's Peter Coleman, he runs the chicken farm out Mupton Hannings.
Mm-hmm.
He's the only one who knows what people put in.
Oh, okay.
It's only one person. So people might be flush this week, they've had a good week on horses or something, they might give them £50.
Yeah.
Or they have a direct debit that goes in once a month for 10 or 20 quid or something like that. And we've got 62 members, so if half do one and half do the other, then that accumulates a bit of money. Of this year, we had about, and a couple of members had some money accumulated, so we had about £3,000 to give away. And that went round to 9 organisations, of which you were one of them. And we're conscious that that's not life-changing, at £300 a time, but it does help in the football club and things like that. And that's consistently Freemasonry as a major charity for a long while. And it's tied in with the Knights of St John and organisations that in Malta.
I don't think I've heard of those. Have you?
I haven't.
Yeah, if you have a look on the internet, Knights of St John, it's a charitable organisation in Malta. And it started off in the Crusades, when they ran hospitals for the Crusaders. So you got a job to find out the reality, but it goes back a long way. Because Malta was the base for the Crusades.
Right.
So it goes back to there. So Knights of St John, various organisations. So more, the only second to the lottery in terms of giving money. Freemasonry, if there's a disaster like the earthquake in Turkey or whatever's going on in Africa for one time or another, in the Yemen and things like that, Freemasonry will be up front with like £500,000 to kickstart the ball rolling for relief.
So how do people sort of, so some of the other like the National Lottery, they have various funding routes where you sort of make applications and things like that.
Oh yeah.
Is that the same with Freemasonry, or is it kind of more once people become aware of
Yeah.
You, like, you will interact a bit more.
You've got Grand Lodge in London.
Yeah.
And you've got us lot, and you've got the provincial Grand Lodge for each county. So we would encourage people to write to Pete Coleman, the charity steward, and you have the various organisations like yourselves, like Age Concern, all kinds of football club,
yeah.
Strip for the kids in the rugby club,
yeah.
All manner of stuff, and also the playgroup. We did some work with them, all kinds of local organisations, and then we get a bit of support, a little bit of back from them, courier for sale, they'll give us a little bit of coverage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the past, Freemasons didn't want to attract any publicity about their charitable giving. For say, they said, we're just going to do it anyway, nobody needs to know, we're happy we've done it, we're not looking for praise.
Yeah.
And they didn't do it. But having said that, some of the media have put Freemasonry in a bad light. It was sinister, nobody knows what's going on, they're a funny old lot, funny handshakes, they look after each other, all that stuff. Some of that's a bit sinister. You get the best playwrights, Linda LaPlante and people like that, brilliant playwrights, who are having a TV scriptwriters, are having a bad week and they can't think of what to put, and they have a dig at Freemasonry. Having said that, you go back to Conan Doyle and some of that stuff, there's some bits, little snippets about Freemasonry, there's some of those things acted out within a lodge.
Okay.
Right.
So it goes back as far as him and Sherlock Holmes.
Right.
So there's a mystery about it. Some people are intrigued and sometimes they get the wrong idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So to counter that, Grand Lodge have been not on a big campaign.
Right.
But, Grand Lodge have come back the other way to get improve the balance a bit so we're better understood.
Yeah. Trying to publicise a bit.
Is Freemason a job?
No. It's a hobby, if you like. It's a kind of a hobby. It's an unusual sort of hobby. People learn all the work, all the ritual stuff. They learn it like they were learning a play.
Learn
the wording of it and such like.
Yeah. Someone else had a follow-up with that as well, like how much time do people spend?
That was probably my...
Was that yours?
How much time do you spend on
them? Well, interesting that. Yeah, a couple of evenings a month, probably. One evening for the lodge meeting and one for the practice.
Yes. That's nice, then.
What are you saying?
No, the Freemasons.
Why are you saying that?
What? You'd say what?
I do like coming here, though.
Does that give you an idea? I just that gives you a bit of an understanding of it?
Yes, it does.
Good.
Yeah. We're saying, there are other things. There are things about... So the pay position, no, because that's just not a job.
No.
What else do people say?
What are the questions?
There's things about... How did... Is Freemasonry something you sought out to do, or something you fell into?
Yeah, that was also my question.
Was it Otis?
Good question. My uncle Jack said to me, he was involved in it in West London, and he said, "I think you'll enjoy it." And he didn't tell me hardly anything about it, and I had to find out for myself once I was in it. You know?
Right.
So.
Is that from?
That's just a family connection. And that was almost secretive back in 1980, I joined. So it was almost secretive then. And they kept quiet and didn't say much, you know. Nowadays, we're far more, we want to be open.
Yeah.
We don't want people to misunderstand, get involved, and then pull out after 18 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the worst outcome, really.
Yeah.
So we work hard to stop that happening.
Yeah.
And we now have a mentor. And we take a slow progress for people joining to try and overcome that issue.
Yeah.
So why might people join and then stop?
Because they don't properly understand what they're getting into, and we haven't explained it properly.